Kenny, press the marzipan button.
Oh, where is it?
Where is it?
We need one of those. Yeah.
This is episode 268 of Bourbon Pursuit, the podcast featuring news, reviews, and interviews with people making the bourbon whiskey industry happen. Before we learn a little bit about Baker's Bourbon today, here's your weekly bourbon news update. Researchers in Finland think they have discovered a cure to hangovers. In a study published Tuesday in the Journal of Alcohol and Alcoholism, researchers from the University of Helsinki and the University of Eastern Finland found that amino acid L-cysteine relieved alcohol-induced ailments such as nausea, headache, stress, and anxiety. Good way to get rid of those Sunday shakies. Woodford Reserve Assistant Master Distiller Elizabeth McCall, who's back on the podcast on episodes 84 and 211, has joined the ranks of Wine Enthusiast 40 Under 40 Tastemakers of 2020. And this recognizes young winemakers, brewers, beverage directors, and others who are changing today's beverage industry. And she was recognized in part for her work to grow rye grain in Kentucky to be used in bourbon. Congrats, Elizabeth. And moving on to bourbon release news. The 2020 Four Roses Small Batch Limited Edition has been announced. It's one of the most coveted bottles that are coming out in the fall every single year. And this year, it's once again a non-chill filtered and bottled at 111.4 proof. It will be a blend of 12-year OBSV, and that is going to be 30% of the blend, 12-year OESV at 25%, 16-year OESK at 25%, and the final 20% of the blend is 19-year OBSK. Four Roses will distribute approximately 14,000 hand-numbered bottles of the 2020 Limited Edition Small Batch to be sold in the United States. We'll have a suggested retail price of $150, and there's also an online lottery for you to be able to get your bottles in person. You can go and check that out at fourroses.com. Maker's Mark has announced the launch of the Maker's Mark 2020 Limited Release. It's a result of more than 12 months of experimentation with Maker's Mark's barrel producer, Independent Stave Company. The first stave in the 2020 Limited Release is SE4, and it's made from virgin French oak in a convection cooked at medium heat with a short toast period, and is responsible for much of that caramel flavor. And the second stave is PR5. It is made from virgin American oak and a convection cooked at low heat very slowly over time to bring out vanilla. It'll be bottled at 110.8 proof, and each bottle of this limited release will retail for a suggested price of $59.99. It'll be available nationwide beginning in September. Freddie No, the 8th generation Beam distiller and creator of Little Book Whiskey, and also our guest back on episode 254, has announced the fourth installment in his annual limited edition series of blends called Little Book Chapter 4, Lessons Learned. The blend consists of 4-year-old Kentucky Straight Bourbon Brown Rice, an 8-year-old Kentucky Straight High Rye Rye Whiskey, and a 7-year-old Kentucky Straight Bourbon Whiskey. It will be bottled at 122.8 proof and will be available nationwide in limited quantities starting in August of 2020 with a suggested retail price of $124.99. And the Pursuit team, well, we're back at it again. If you happen to be scrolling through the TTB this last week, you may have seen a new label approval, and we're pleased to announce Pursuit United. It's a project that we've been working on for almost 8 months, blending lots of different mash bills from lots of different distilleries to find that perfect balance of rich complexity, sweet oak, and those fruity flavors. We're fortunate enough to have worked with some of the great icons in the industry to help us dial in our blending skills. And the final blend will be barrels from Kentucky, New York, and Tennessee. I know what you're thinking, but it's not from that distillery in Tullahoma. And as whiskey enthusiasts, we couldn't be happier to bring a product to the market that'll be offered at 108 proof. So you can look for more information that's going to come for Pursuit United here in the very near future. This initial release will be around 2,000 bottles. It'll be available online at Sealbox and select retailers in Kentucky, Tennessee, Georgia, and Texas, with an estimated SRP of $65. Now, in more Bourbon Pursuit news, in the past 2 weeks, we've selected 2 barrels from Balcones, 2 barrels from Bullet, and 2 barrels from Wild Turkey for Russell's Reserve. That puts us up to 30 barrels that we've selected so far in 2020. You can get more information on how to get hands on these bottles and actually join us in some of the barrel selections themselves by going to patreon.com/bourbonpursuit. For today's podcast, We know that Baker's is a brand that we've discussed. We've done it before with Beam's brand ambassador Beth Burrows back on episode 95. But this time, we dive into the whiskey itself. And today, Patreon supporter Joel Francis sent us three blind samples of Booker's. It's the new single barrel 7-year-old, the old 7-year small batch with that black wax that's no longer in production, and the most recent limited edition of the Baker's 13-year. Which one's going to come out on top? Just stay tuned to find out. With that, enjoy today's episode. And here's Fred Minnick with Above the Char.
I'm Fred Minnick, and this is Above the Char. I've written about this a lot over the years and tweet about it even more. And for some reason, it just drives me crazy. It bugs me to no end when a distillery talks about they are the first at something. Now, I know what a lot of people say. Well, if it's something significant, shouldn't they point it out? I'm finding that more and more and more distilleries are touting things that they're the first at that nobody cares about. We were the first to change a light bulb over a fermentation tank. Listen, I don't care about that. We were the first to have a broom closet on the same floor as our warehouse crew. Nobody cares. And the fact is most of these things that somebody was first at, like let's say the first barrel finish of a particular type of barrel, when you dig down the line, they actually were not the first. So not only do people say they claim they are the first at something, they don't even do their homework to kind of validate that they are the first. Now, that was a big thing when somebody would say that they were the first distillery in a state during Prohibition. Or since Prohibition. And I remember somebody did that with Indiana. I don't remember the distillery, but somebody said that they were the very first distillery in Indiana since Prohibition. And all of us were kind of scratching our heads. Did someone forget to tell MGP, formerly LDI and Seagram's, that they were open after Prohibition? So if you're a distiller, if you are someone that you feel like you need to make a claim out there that you are the first or whatever and you're proud of it, go for it. Do it. Just one, make sure it's significant enough that people are going to care. And two, just do your homework and make sure that you are legitimately the first at whatever it is. And that's this week's Above the Char. Hey, did you know I just produced the Bourbon Women Conference SIP Summer Series? Oh man, it was 3 days of fun. You can go to my YouTube and check it out. A lot of educational stuff. My two favorite episodes were the Whistle Pigs Yeast Seminar and Michter's on Low Barrel Entry Proof. Go to my YouTube page, check it out. Till next week, cheers.
It's that time of the year where everybody's starting to make their vacation plans on visiting Kentucky, the mecca of bourbon. And if you are coming to Kentucky, you need to make sure you visit us at Pursuit Spirits in Louisville. We're right in the heart of Clifton near Butchertown and Nulu and only just a few miles away from downtown Louisville. But when you do come, you need to book your experience to go do our whole shebang. This is the one that's really the star of the show. You get a full-on tasting. You get to do your own personal barrel selection experience. And you get to grab a whiskey thief and fill your bottle directly from the barrel. We're doing something completely brand new that nobody else is doing here in bourbon country. Plus, you get a free sweet tasting glass at the end of it. I guarantee you, you're going to end up being one of the many people that's also leaving us a 5-star review. So make sure you come and check us out. You can book your reservation by going to pursuitspirits.com and clicking the Visit Us button.
It's that time again to get bourbon strong with Give270. Purchase your $50 tickets for your chance to win from our 50 bourbon prizes. Don't miss out on rare bottles and grand prizes like the legendary Pappy Set, a Weller Rainbow, and the Blood Oath Trilogy. Hurry, only 3,000 tickets are available. Single bottle winners go back in for the grand prize draw. Will you win the ultimate Pappy Set or one of our other incredible prizes? Get your tickets now at Give270.org. Charitable gaming license ORG 0002703.
From their bar to yours, Chad and Sarah of the popular YouTube channel It's Bourbon Night bring you their favorite at-home old-fashioned mix with the new Elemental Elixirs Golden Hour Syrup. It's a custom-made syrup with notes of bold black tea, warm spices, and orange zest. All you need is your favorite whiskey and ice. No bitters needed. One bottle makes 16 drinks, so that's only $1 cocktail before you add your own whiskey. They can also be enjoyed in other cocktails or spirits, mocktails, coffee, tea, and anything you can think of. It's crafted locally in Lexington, Kentucky, and you can get your bottle now at whiskeyambitions.com. And we're back with another episode of Bourbon Pursuit. It's the official podcast of Bourbon, but you all know that. You're dedicated listeners, and today the whole team is here, and we're doing something that's actually a suggestion from one of our Patreon members, and it was to kind of look at the Baker's line, because Baker's has sort of seen a resurgence in the past, I don't know, year and a half. I guess that's probably the best way to say it. You know, we've all been accustomed for the longest time. You had the Baker, it's always been at least a 7-year age-dated product, but you always had the small batch product that was the black wax. It also had the black label on it. It was always kind of dark and hidden in the corner. You didn't really see it too much. And then they revitalized the package. You had the new, they got rid of the small batch, made it a single barrel, gave it a little bit better of a packaging design. And then they came out with the 13-year limited edition, and they said, hey, I want you guys to taste these, blind them, and see which one you like best.
All right. You know, yeah. When I think of Baker's, I think of the actual human being, you know, that it's named after. And, you know, Baker Beam was the master distiller for Jim Beam. But he was kind of like I don't want to say he was the outcast. I mean, he's still with us. He's very much still got his wit and everything. But he's kind of like the guy that was... You know, they were like, okay, maybe don't bring your Harley to the, you know, to the gathering this week. You know, he was a guy, you know, and he would just like...
He was a man's man,
he was a man's man and still is. Booker No kind of became the face of that company, you know, Baker was very much behind the scenes doing a lot. And so they named a whiskey after him. And for a long time, it's just been 107. You know, 107. And I think someone at the company was like, why the hell don't we get Booker or Baker out to more things? I mean, he's a legacy of our company. And then suddenly started seeing him at like their honorary barrel rolls, and they would recognize him more. But I would say, man, as bourbon was getting its resurgence, they didn't bring him out to stuff. And so I'm glad to see that someone in that company appreciates him and is recognizing him for, you know, the great distiller he was. And these new expressions and everything, it's just exciting, you know, because we're getting a lot, you know, a few things to taste. And hell, we all like to taste something.
Yeah, can't say no to that.
Yeah.
I mean, the other thing I kind of see about the kind of the resurgence of the brand is we see this across a lot of portfolios of a lot of different companies. They take something that's been on the shelves for a while. I mean, Ryan, we've seen what's happened with 1792 in the past early times.
Everything. Forgotten thing. And now, you know, mm-hmm. they revamped that. But yeah, I mean, Baker's, I mean, on the small batch collection, there was so much focus on Booker's and Knob Creek that nobody really ever gave Baker's, you know, its due. I always thought it was better than both of those.
Yeah.
You know, it just, you kind of forget about it because, like you said, it was never promoted. It's kind of a boring package back in the day. But now that they've revamped, I love the packaging of it. And I'm sure the whiskey will follow it, but it's always been a great product for me.
You know, the 107, man, I would tell you that there are not many bourbons that were better suited to make cocktails. Like, it tasted great by itself.
Yeah, it's... I mean, it's perfectly proved at 107. Like, Booker's is always like, all right, that's a little, you know... I mean, it's good, but it's like, holy hell, it punches you, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas 107 is real more balanced for you, so...
Yeah, I think the one thing that I'm kind of nervous today is that these are all going to be blind samples, so we don't know what we're going to be getting, you know, which one's A, which one's B, which one's C. But if, for some reason, the small batch comes out ahead... I'm going to be on like a hunt to try to find the last remaining wax tops that are available in the city.
Yeah.
So do you have the results?
The results are here in my email. Okay. I haven't opened it up
yet. Looked yet.
Okay. I haven't looked at it yet. So this is all going to be,
let's keep this fair now.
Yes. Mm-hmm. We're all going into this blind. So we've got three samples, A, B, and C. So I guess, let's start naturally with A here.
Okay.
Kind of figure out where we're going. So I'm glad to have, you know, both Fred and Ryan here to kind of go over tasting notes and
do these all three of us together. Mm-hmm. It's kind of, we don't do this much. I enjoy these.
I enjoy hanging out with you guys.
Yeah. I would say the nose here, this is really good. It's, I mean, I get like cherry and
It's also, we have to preface this, that this is recording and this is our first drinks of the day. So we're making it happen early on.
It's about 10 a.m.
Yeah, it's about 10 a.m.
10, 18.
You know, usually this is about my fourth drink of the day. But, yeah.
Well, most tasting panels, they taste in the morning. You know, yeah. So that's what we got to follow their footsteps.
I usually brush my teeth with Jim Beam White,
to rinse instead of Listerine. It's like, just swish it around.
Well, my Listerine is Elijah Craig.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Just to make sure.
Don't make any correlation there.
Just to make sure, you know, when you go out, be like, no, officer, that's my daily hygiene.
That's like with all the hand sanitizer stuff, you know, made by the distilleries. And we've been using them in our trucks and putting them in spray bottles. And I'm like, if you ever get pulled over and be like, I promise, officer, I'm just spraying like neutral, you know, high proof neutral grain spirits. It's not, I'm not boozing back here. Because it does just like you spray it, it smells like, you know, somebody's been pounding vodka or something.
Yeah, I mean, there's some of them that smell just awful. I told you guys this story. Like, I my son's daycare had like one of those pump bottles. I pumped it, washed my hands when they got in the car and smelled my hand. I got an instant headache. I was sick to my stomach. It was just after just smelling it. And I'm like, I don't know what they were using, the process they were using, but I immediately, you know, went to Barrel Bourbon. I said, hey, can I buy or get you know, some hand sanitizer from you. And I took it back to my daycare because no parent should have to have that on their damn hands.
Yep.
But back to the tasting, your note on cherry is really spot on. I'm curious, does anyone else get this big old honey note there? I get a big old honey here.
Yeah, I kind of get like a orange marmalade, sugary type flavor with and then a lot of Kenny's favorite, like sweet oak kind of on the nose. The nose is really good.
A is going to be hard to beat for me, man. That's hitting all the points of my palate.
Yeah, I agree.
The nose is like perfect for me. Haven't tried it yet.
Gosh, just first one going into it. If this isn't the 13 year, I'd be surprised.
Well, it's freaking good.
Yeah.
And usually when Beam is between 6 and 10 years old, for me, there's always a cornbread note. And so I'm with you. This is definitely... It is past that cornbread note now to where it's like honey and caramelization and all that. And so if it is, you know, it's gorgeous.
Yeah there's tons of
solid whiskey here.
Citrus, a lot of sugar, and then like just a real nice like spice at the end. Like it's like, I don't know. It's fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Kenny, press the marzipan button.
Oh, where is it?
Where is it?
We need one of those. Yeah. It's like, ba-da-doom. Need some kind of like bell to go off or something.
Oh
like
my
that.
God. Can we just drink all of it? Can we just start, have A?
And yeah, we can probably just, A. Let's get B and C out of the way.
Yeah, that kind of almond cream thing going too.
Yeah, no, it's...
There's like everything going on.
Oh
in
my
this.
Gosh. I mean, this is... Is it just because we're so thirsty and like we just, you know, it's our first drink of the day and we're like, we haven't seen each other in so long. And so we're having like a little nostalgia here.
Our tongues are like, thank God we needed that bourbon. Start your day.
Needed the shot.
It's like coffee.
Every time we come here and do a show, I always think to myself, I need to bring my own coffee because Kenny and Lauren don't drink coffee. I'm still wrapping my head around how you don't drink coffee.
It's never something that we've really, I don't know, I never really needed.
Do your parents drink coffee?
My parents actually do. I mean, my dad started tailoring off a little bit. They used to be like 4 or 5 cups in the morning kind of people. And now like they've started.
Kind of people.
Yeah.
Kenny's so high energy anyways.
That's true.
I think when he drinks it, it gives him a little jitters and anxiety, which.
It's true.
I can only drink one cup or two espressos per day, or I like am in anxiety panic mode.
Wow.
Like I get jittery and like.
It calms me.
Oh, not me. I mean, if some people, I mean, I've had it before, like you go out to a nice dinner and they're like, oh, would you like a coffee afterwards? Are you making an Italian dinner or something like that? I'm like, yeah, you know, sure, fine. And then it's like 3 a.m. I'm just like, wide awake. My eyeballs are shaking. It's just like,
I can't do coffee. Like I can nail it down to like, if I drink past like 2:30, like I can't sleep that night. Like it'll stay in me and I'll just like, won't be able to fall asleep. I'm really sensitive to caffeine, and I'm sure you are too.
I'm not sensitive. It's just something that I've never really gravitated towards. I mean,
well,
I think
it sounds like you're sensitive. Well, you're staying up
all night. Eyeballs are shaking. Yeah. I'm not sensitive.
No, I promise. I can handle a lot.
I get stung with a bee and just my face explodes. No, it's just something that my body just probably you know, it hasn't been used to it, so therefore it doesn't develop it or doesn't, you know, it can't process it the same exact way.
It is a drug.
Now, if I don't have coffee for an extended period of time, do not come near me. My head hurts so badly.
Yeah.
My insides are like screaming at me. You are right. It is a drug. And in the Mormon faith, they're like, don't touch caffeine. It's a drug. And it there's not a thing. When everything kind of started, I was like, you guys can take my whiskey away, but you touch my fucking coffee, you're dead. You know?
Yeah. I don't know why I was listening to a coffee podcast, not to get on coffee, but they were talking about how it doesn't actually give you energy. It just tricks your brain. There's a, you know, chemical you release when you get like melatonin, whatever, to get tired, but it tricks it to shut off those triggers to make you tired. So it like bypasses and you just never feel tired. And so that's why it's harder to fall asleep or
it's like whatever. Cocaine.
Yeah. It's a mild version.
Cocaine and coffee. What could go wrong?
That's Coca-Cola, you know, you got caffeine and cocaine.
Mm-hmm. So Wanda Glass too.
Yes. On to B now. Moving to B. Yeah.
Coffee pursuit.
Number B.
All right. So we definitely, my nose is already picking up like a steep drop from the nose.
This is
grains
more,
coming in.
Yeah. It's a little kind of more malty, like chocolate. Little notes on there.
I want to say, I don't know, Fred, if you ever get this, if you smell some kind of whiskeys and you're like, you ever had the, when you were a kid and you had just like a jar full of pennies and you had like just pennies all over your hand, you smell your hand.
Metallic.
Yeah, I mean, you get that.
The nickel or whatever, or the iron taste, like when you, like you take a cap off the beer and you taste like the metal.
And I'm not saying this has a huge pronounced flavor that I just think going from A to B, it just kind of like showed up there. And if I was to go in directly with B, I probably wouldn't be able to pull that out.
Yeah, so B.
It has that cornbread note.
It's got the cornbread note, you know? Cornbread, just a drizzle of honey, just a touch of salt and pepper. But
it's still good. I mean, I enjoy it, but.
Again, but A is like.
Yeah, A's.
Come on over and stay the night. And B's like. You know what? I'll call you tomorrow.
Yeah. Well, B is very one-dimensional, whereas A had like a plethora of things you could pull from it. Mm-hmm. This has got that, and it might be because you said it, but cornbread, but no, it does have like that doughy kind of like malty kind of, a little bit chocolate kind of in there for me, but.
The finish doesn't last as long.
Yeah, it's very short, whereas the first one, I mean, it kept building for me.
Mm-hmm. I know.
I guess a question for you all is, why do you think Baker's wanted to move from a small batch to a single barrel? I think that's, it seems to me.
Seems ass backwards.
It does. It seems different in regards of like, how do we streamline? How do we make this easier?
This is marketing 101. You know, they're just like, and it's also like managing supply. You know, what Henry McKenna did. Was it kind of like Henry McKenna and Blanton's kind of put like this, like this face to like demand to the distillers. And they're looking at like all these people hunting Henry McKenna and Blanton's, and they're both single barrels.
I wonder why on Henry McKenna. Huh? Guilty as charged.
But so all these brands are like, okay, guys, we need to have a single barrel and then maybe throw in a honey barrel to go win something, you know, that sort of thing. And I think you started seeing that. And then on the supply side, maybe they only do 300 barrels a year of this. And now that frees up a lot of whiskey for, you know, something else. So it does two things. It puts like a new conversation out there, a different type of demand. A different type of seeker of the whiskey.
Yeah, and I guess as a buyer, you never know what you're going to... That's the exciting thing about single barrels. Mm-hmm. It might taste completely different, but you might get one that's like far above, you know, all the others. And, you know, you kind of have this like magic barrel, you know, that you pick up versus just like the same offering every single time. So it's like a whiskey geek. It kind of makes it a little more appealing than just a small batch.
But sometimes you want that consistency.
That's true, yeah. But I mean, it probably, you know, like I think single barrels, they have more attractiveness right now to a buyer, like because it's like, oh, you know, this. So it's like, let's get them in the door with the single barrels. And then once they like it, maybe they'll try our more consistent product over here.
And I agree with that. And I actually think that, you know, small batch is a big friggin' lie. you know, because it's not regulated. It's right. not.
It's very loosely. It's like a small batch can be a 200, 500 barrels.
Exactly. Or it can be like 20 from like Willett. You right. know? So, and there's no obligation for them to taste anything. They just go and they dump it. And there we go. Small batch, you know? And so I'm hypercritical when I see small batch on there. I'm buying the off the shelf. I'm buying single barrel almost every day of the week over a small batch because I know that at least someone tasted it. I know at least it's made like some type of, you know, protocol, whereas like a small batch could just be a dump. Yeah, know, it could be a dump of a bunch of barrels.
Yeah, I think it's funny when they look at the wording that some people use. I'm surprised they haven't tried to change that vernacular up on a lot of these bottles because I know like Jefferson's uses.
I was
like,
about to say that Jefferson's it uses super small batch.
Super small batch or very small batch yeah. or something like that.
Very, very small batch.
Super small batch reserve in the ocean.
infinitesimal small batch. Like, I don't know like if people like at some point somebody's got to use some sort of other word besides small to be able to, you know, differentiate themselves because it doesn't have any connotation or any meaning. I mean, as you said, it could be anywhere between 20 to 200 barrels. And I think that would be something that maybe as whiskey geeks and consumers, we'd love to be able to see that be a little bit more regulated or say like, hey, here's the magic number. I don't know what it would be, but, you know, everybody's a little
like
bit different size.
You know how Booker's has kind of changed and like put a label on each batch, I guess now to like say like, you know, these batches are different, in which they are. Have they reduced the amount of barrels going into those or like to?
Booker's been about 375 pretty consistently. So they range between 375 and 425 in their dumps.
Gotcha. Yeah. So it still seems that number, you would blend out a lot of inconsistencies, but I guess.
I would think so too.
I've never had like Booker's different batches like next to each other, I guess. Maybe we'll do that one day.
I will tell you, of the small batching ones that use a healthy amount of barrels, I would put Booker's up there as the most unique and consistent to that particular brand. And because it has, you know, Booker's name on it, you know, Fred and Freddie, I mean, they take that very, very seriously. And I've been with them when they're going through that process. And, you know, Beam's big enough where they can have like 10 different batches of like 375. You know,
right?
Dumps. They're like, all right, taste this batch. You know, so they are equipped to be able to handle that for a consistency to meet like the branding of Booker's. But I think in general, you know, I think, you know, we've never really talked about this, but I don't think you should be calling your product small batch if you have over 100 barrels in it.
Yeah,
I think 100 barrels should be like, you know, the limit. And the term is not. You know, this is why I like respect Wild Turkey so much. You know, they have, I think, 1,200 barrels going into 101. Ain't nobody calling that small batch. They don't want to call it small batch.
Yeah.
You know? So, you know.
And why don't people want to sit there and boast about really large batch?
Yeah.
Put it on the label,
biggest batch ever.
like super, super big batch. Like,
come look at my batch.
Yeah.
That's a good point. Now they will.
Yeah.
Probably. Yeah, maybe that's just it. That's the new thing. Everybody, Kenny Coleman gave us the secret for the future.
Big
batch. We're large batch.
The largest batch there is. Then it just becomes a pissing contest.
If I see that, I'll vomit.
And then it's the Guinness Book of World Records.
They'll put anything on a bottle to sell it.
Oh,
you know?
God's
so
sake.
I'm not surprised if they would, really.
So good. It's the largest batch.
So is Knob Creek small batches, are they similar, you know, dumps or?
I don't know the exact count on them, but it's.
I would assume bigger. They're probably bigger.
Yeah, they're bigger. I don't know the exact count. I would say they're probably closer to 500, but I don't know for sure.
Yeah.
That's still a lot of barrels.
It is.
It's a lot of barrels.
And listen, folks, Knob Creek is friggin' consistent.
Yeah.
You know, it's really, really consistent.
Yeah, and
good.
I don't mean to talk about Knob Creek on the Baker's Throwdown, but yeah, I mean,
it's all the same family.
Gosh, we had that 15-year-old the other day, and man, that was like perfectly balanced, mm-hmm. like just so good. Like we were blown away by it. I mean, it was like just dried for like heaven ecstasy.
There, you know, Beam has you know, some warehouses in there, those aluminum skin warehouses that just breathe really well and they get heated really well in the summer. And they'll have some barrels in there, man, that will just blow your mind.
Yeah.
And the center cut action. And I think you know, it's funny, like we can have this debate all day long is like who has the best whiskey. I think Buffalo Trace gets this reputation for it because they actually go through a lot of effort to make sure you know, the stuff that they're putting out there in their limited edition and all that is like, it really, it's coming from good places. It's got some good age to it. And these other guys are just like, well, you know, we got Jim Beam White Label and Evan Williams, and you know, we like those checks.
Right.
So that 15-year-old is just not as much of a priority to us.
You know? Sure.
And so, like, I often wonder what the world would look like in terms of our opinions of who has the best whiskey is if, like, if Beam took a very similar strategy as Buffalo Trace. Yeah,
if, like, the small batch series was, like, if they put as much into it as the antique collection.
Exactly. Yeah. So what if, like, so if Jim Beam says, you know what? Fuck this, like, mainstream going everywhere. Let's be very limited. Let's get only our best stocks, and let's put it out there. Think about that. They could throw Makers in there. They could do Bakers. They could do Knob Creek. They could do Booker's. I mean, you want to tell me that a 15-year-old Maker's Mark wouldn't beat a William Lew Weller? I guarantee you it would.
Yeah.
Just, I mean, we...
Well, simple math alone. I mean, Beam has so much more barrels than Buffalo Trace has. I mean, there's, you know, like you said, they could really cherry pick and fine tune if they wanted to. But it's probably a pain in the ass, and Jim Beam White's paying the bills, you know.
It's
economies of scale sort of thing.
Right.
You know, you look at where your money makers are, and you figure out, okay, yeah, we can make a splash here today. And it'd be publicity, right? Mm-hmm. That's what you're going to get out of it, right? And I think that's always good to a degree. I mean, we know that Buffalo Trace plays that game better than anybody else out there because mm-hmm. there isn't a press release that doesn't come out that isn't on one of our blogs, our friends' blogs, Vine Pair, Up Rocks, or whatever it is, right? It's on everything.
But it's funny too, like Buffalo Trace is now like trying to more or less play the Beam game is their long-term vision. They're trying to get like as much whiskey, much as volume, much, you know, mm-hmm. consistency as possible is like kind of how they're pivoting towards. So it's funny how like, they're trying to replicate more what Beam's doing.
But how great would it be if every one of these big distilleries had like that, you know, BTAC kind of strategy, you know, it gave us like a portfolio every fall and we could just like really determine who is legitimately making the best whiskey. And I think, you know, Buffalo Trace, you know, overwhelmingly gets that conversation.
It is really good. I mean, there's no...
What's that?
I mean, it is really good.
It is fantastic,
Every year in, year out, William Lew Weller is like always... one of my favorites. Like,
it's so good.
It's just...
And Stag, typically. Oh, and Stag, even the bad years of Stag is better than, like, you know, the majority of the Bookers.
Yeah,
you know?
Most of the antique, the Ryes are, like, pretty hit or miss, but the other ones are pretty solid usually.
I agree. I think you kind of led onto something. By the way, let's start on C a little bit.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think you really hit on something that'd be really interesting to see is if all distilleries came out with some sort of super high-end premium, you know, whatever it is, like even if let's say Wild Turkey did it and you know they had the rare breed super rare release
and you don't let the marketing guys dictate what it is.
Exactly.
Like you had the tasting panels and the master distiller do it because a lot of them are decided by marketing teams first and then they have to kind of build something around that.
That's exactly right.
So yeah,
and I think that is why we complain about the marketing of Buffalo Trace after the whiskey is out. Okay, so that's, I think everybody does that. You're talking about the press releases and everything, and
rely on other people.
But they're like, the marketing teams are not dictating the whiskey at Buffalo Trace or the releases. And, you know,
whereas other distilleries, they are.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. And so that is like, so what Buffalo Trace is doing is actually, it's very much appealing to this connoisseur market. It's appealing to the people who want to learn more about whiskey and taste more whiskey. And what the other companies are doing are figuring out like, you know, how can we make more money, you know? And there's no wrong answer.
We'd love to give our stockholders a good little bump this year.
And so, Four Roses does what they can, but they're like kind of, you know, one brand. But I think their like annual release is probably a close second for like trying to like appeal.
Their limited release small batch or limited edition small batch is always up there for me every year.
They spend a good amount of time on it. And, you know, that's always another thing that we've had Brent on the show. And he talks about it. I mean, they do. They spend a considerable amount of time making sure that they find those barrels and everything like that. And I think what blows my mind is when we talk to him about it is he's always like, oh, yeah, we got plenty of 20-year barrels still left for these for years to come. And everybody else is like, we're running pretty low over here. So, yeah. I mean, it blows my mind that they still hold a lot of the stuff back for some of those super rare, unique blends and releases.
If you are a Four Roses fan, you know, the future is good for you. I mean, it really is.
All right. So on C, what are we pulling out here? Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point-of-sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. And with Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. And you can get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/bourbon, all lowercase, and go to shopify.com/bourbon to take your retail business to the next level today. Shopify.com/bourbon. All right, so on C, what are we pulling out here? I'm going to have to go back to B and...
I'm getting a lot more ethanol.
I'm getting like a big alcohol nose and a wood nose.
Yeah.
This is not an appealing nose for me at all.
Yeah,
I was about to say. I was like, I kind of like the nose on this one.
Well, you do like oak and high proof.
Yeah, so I was like, the oak was definitely there for me.
Okay, so on the palate, oak, hint of cornbread, maybe some Jerry, but the oak is just too dominant.
Yeah,
this is C is not one I would recommend. Actually, this would be a lower.
It's, kind of. I think this is even more, as Ryan, you'd said, like more one dimensional than the last one.
Yeah, it's very, it's just alcohol and wood. Mm-hmm. Like as Fred said, maybe he's putting it in my mind, but
I'm also into your mind.
But I don't know if they made it like this, ABC, but that's probably how I would rate them.
Yeah, order, definitely.
Well, not to put the horse before the cart, or
let me close go back this out, to but, let me go back to A and just spend a little more time.
Yeah, the good thing is also shout out.
Yeah, the nose on A is just like phenomenal.
It's head and heels. Shout out to Joel Francis who actually sent these samples to us. So thank you, Joel.
And Joel, I'm sorry that I lost my samples, but thank you for resending more. But if Kenny and Ryan know me, so they know, like they send me something.
Yeah, it's a black hole over there.
There's without an assistant, like there's like no chance I'm going to find it.
Well, the idea actually came. He was like, hey, I'll just send you all samples and you can just have some fun with them. I was like, I've got a better idea. How about we record a podcast actually talking about it? Because this is something that, you know, it gives us the ability to, you know, talk about ourselves a little bit and taste some whiskey and kind of give us some our insights into it. Oh, you are just
man, A,
lip smacking on A over there, aren't you?
A's all up on me.
I'm trying to see if I can get just a little bit more out of C here.
Do we have more tastings coming up, or can I finish this?
Yeah, A is like just
do your thing.
It's fruity. It's got oak. Mm. It's got spice. I mean, it's got sugar, almonds. I mean, just
here.
It's perfect.
So do this, Ryan. Take a look at. So let's here's a little exercise.
Here. Oh gosh, you can see the color alone, can't you?
Yeah. So we're taking a look at the colors. Obviously, the one on the left is just dominant. But take a look at the legs. Although these are different whiskeys, they're from the same distillery. Look how similar the legs are. And this is something that I'm always kind of like, you know, talking about in my classes. But you can actually identify some of the distilleries, you know, if you can confirm it's from the same distillery of like their legs. And they're kind of like, they're just, the Beam has like a globulous kind of like leg formation.
Yeah, and these are non-chilled filtered, right? Or are they?
I can grab one of the Baker's bottles real quick.
I'm pretty sure that the old one was chill filtered. I'm not sure about the 13-year-old one.
Gotcha.
Talk amongst yourselves for a second.
Yeah, I mean, the A is like, right in my wheelhouse for me. I mean,
it's so good.
It is like, I know.
I mean, now I'm getting like a gorgeous like apple pie, like a big old like just that bite like of the corner, and you got that little bit of an apple there and little cinnamon, little nutmeg, and that just all that stuff kind of together in the. And that just beautiful. Oh my God.
Yeah, as it sit here, I get kind of, it's moving more into like a peach kind of category for like peach flavors, like peach cobbler.
The fruits are just coming out.
I know.
Right?
It's like as it opens up, it's like you go to the Paul's Fruit Market and there's like all the fruits are jumping out. Like, here I am.
It's like they're like standing up and dancing. Hey, pick me. I'm over here.
Yep.
So it doesn't say anything about being non-chill filtered, at least on the Baker's Single Barrel. This is one of the latest releases. We did a whiskey quickie of this, and Ryan completely destroyed the label when we were open, if you remember.
I know.
It was, you butchered it so bad.
Oh, yeah. Sorry about that.
It's like you took a lighter to it to try to get it off or something.
Yeah.
You know, that's the thing about like opening those labels when the camera's on. It's like, it's risky.
It is.
You know?
Cause, it's like, because sometimes the perforation doesn't exactly do what you want, and you're like, and then you're like, well, damn it, just rip the damn thing. You know,
and then like you got people watching, you're like, need some help, like commenting, and then you're like,
it's like doing a floater on a New York sour. Oh, you know, man. In front of people,
2,000 people watching.
Yeah, exactly.
You gotta give yourself some slack. You did such a great job. Oh, I know. That. Come on, man.
I'll never let that down.
Ah, it's okay.
It just makes me better for next time.
Oh my God,
make you practice harder.
So friggin' money. Yeah, so it's ABC for me. And actually I would say C is in such a last place, it's not even funny, and I would heavily not recommend.
So what, I know what Evan Williams Black is like your what's the word I'm looking for?
Baseline.
Your baseline, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, your baseline. What, and that's a, what, an 88 or?
86.
86, yeah. Gotcha.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you think you would?
C is probably going to be, like, I'd have to spend more time with it, but it's under 80. I'd probably put it in a 75 point, so it's drinkable. It's drinkable, but, you know, I'm not wanting to drink it.
Yeah.
So I think when I go back to B and C, I know you all are just falling in love with A over there, and I'll probably venture back that way here eventually.
Yeah, we're over here like, hey, what's going on here?
We've already poo-pooed on B and C.
It's just like, I don't even want to make a bad analogy, but when I go back to B and C, I think B has a little bit more character, a little bit more spice on the finish. As you had mentioned, C is a little bit more just kind of like oak water. Not to say that there is anything super bad in my opinion about it.
So what Kenny's saying is there's a chance.
Yeah. Water. I mean, B does have a little like kind of honey,
like
sugary.
Like taste B and C real quick next to one another.
Yeah, whereas C is like, for me, oak water with alcohol. B's a little more, has some more depth to it.
And so before we do a reveal, I mean, where do you think these all stack up? I mean, I think we got to know A's got to be the 13-year single or limited, right?
I would think so, but I've been
if
wrong
it's
before.
Not, I mean, that would really be a really kick in the ass.
So we have a 13-year single. What else?
I would say if it comes out like where it's not the 13-year-old, I'd say then the pours got mixed up because there is no way. That's one of the other ones.
Well, I guess we'll find out.
Because that color, the color alone.
Oh, it's an easy.
I mean, the color alone just says it's got some depth to it. And it's not cast strength, so.
Mm-hmm. I blanked out for a second. What did you say what you would rate A as?
A is going to be in the 90s. I mean, I really need to spend some time with it.
Yeah.
But this is, you know, funny thing is, I'm actually not doing many ratings these days because I'm pushing everything through, you know, YouTube, and I'm not writing as much because I'm just so slammed. And my process, I don't believe in like giving a rating unless I can taste it three times in three different days. But I definitely believe this is probably between like a 92 and a 95.
Well, here, start the Baker Madness. You heard it here first.
Well, I mean, if
Fred Minnick effect.
If it is the 13-year single barrel, which we all believe it is because of just the color alone and depth and everything like that, I mean, this has been sold out for a while, right? So anybody finding that, because it came in a beautiful like silver packaging and all this other kind of stuff too. So cheers to anybody out there that actually is able to snag a bottle
of it. That's so good.
Yeah, that's a... That's three thumbs up.
I want to
reviewing system for us. This would be three thumbs up.
I want to taste this up against, throw in some other like, find the 12-year-old Elijah Craig's, you know, the get some things in that 12-year-old to 15-year-old range. I want to put this in a blind tasting up against that, an old rip, you know, the 12-year, and see how it comes out. I think this would fare really, really well in a blind competition. Well, I mean, it's doing great now.
Well, Kenny's got some stuff over there.
Yeah. We'll have a heyday down here. I guess the other thing is kind of question to you all is when we start looking at when we are releasing things and the age statements and the price points, things are a little bit all over the place. When we look at, like, say, Elijah Craig 12-year, and we say it is, you know, the barrel-proof version of it, and it has a retail of, like, $65. We're all like, okay, yeah, bang on. Like, that's it. And then you look at something like, say, like, Michter's 10 that is lower in age, but also comes with, like, almost a triple price point, like $120, $150.
Well, I think they're, you know, they have a fewer bottles than the Elijah one.
And they're sourcing.
So you have some economic layers there when it comes to that. And then you also have the, and this is the realistic truth, is that some of these companies are pricing based on the secondary market. It's true.
Oh, yeah.
They're pricing on the secondary market. And some companies like Buffalo Trace and Heaven Hill don't really, you know, they see it, they know it's there. They don't like the secondary market, but they're not letting it dictate their SRPs. And so when you see these high SRPs, like Whistlepig's a great example. Before he died, you know, Dave Pickerell told me that he's like, I'm pricing this so no one can sell it on the secondary market. And that was like his Boss Hog series. And I was like, well, congratulations, because everybody fucking hates you now because it's $600.
and it's not moving.
It's not moving.
Mission accomplished.
But it's good. But, you know, that's the realistic aspect here, is that these higher price points from something like Michter's 10-year-old, they are, you know, and those rooms are like, how do we make this secondary proof? Oh, well, I got an idea. Let's charge three times the amount as Elijah Craig barrel proof. I mean, I don't know if that came up as a conversation, but that's the realistic
situation. But you can't fault them, right? No. And it's definitely two different sides of the situation here. I mean, we look at it from an economic perspective. Yes, if you're a brand owner and you want to capture that revenue, that market share right now, yeah, absolutely. Like, yeah, sure, go ahead and make a few extra bucks on it. Because it's, I guess what, it doesn't really matter. At some point, it's going to end up on secondary anyway.
Yeah.
It doesn't, it's, you're never going to stop that from happening.
It's any business, though. You're like always trying to find that balance of price versus, because you want it to sell, but you don't want to give it away. So it's like always like a thing. Yeah. You got to finally, you want to price it to where you make good margins, but you don't want to overprice it to, so it's just, it's a always walking that. And right now that it's all selling, so they're just going to probably keep poking the bear till they find out where there's resistance. And right now there has been no resistance.
And you're in a tricky situation that you don't want to piss off your existing consumer base. I mean, these are the people that have kept you there, as Fred always said, who takes you to the dance and everything
that. Yeah.
And if you continue, I mean, that is always the one thing that I will give to Sazerac and Buffalo Trace, is that we've always see marginal increases, but that's just inflation in general. And it's not to say like, oh shit, like we're leaving 300% on the table every single time we sell a bottle. They continue to try to stay at a reasonable SRP for everything that they try to do, because I feel that they look at the long game. They look at the long-term solution of what whiskey is going to be, and they don't want people to hate their product because of all of a sudden, you know, they're,
you just then say, it's like twofold. They get hate because there's not enough product. And so it's like you can't win.
And almost like, you know, we talked about the Buffalo Trace Antique Collection, kind of like setting the bar for like the, like how to do the releases. I mean, Buffalo Trace also has a lot of pressure on them because they are kind of like carrying the American whiskey industry from a quality perspective on like these limited edition releases, and no one else is, you know, doing anything like that. So they have a lot more pressure on them and a lot more eyeballs on them. And I do think they're priced too low. I really do. And I think it's great if you can find a BTAC for $99. Congratulations. But the retailers who get those bottles, they're like, I'm not going through this. This is $1,200. And so they then get that kind of like backlash. And Buffalo Trace says, well, it's not our fault. But I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's,
I think they could very easily move it like sub 300 and get no pushback.
I think you're right.
And if they didn't do that, the laws have changed so much that they could just sell it on their own in the gift shop.
Right.
Or even online.
Yep.
I think that place would burn down if they sold it on the gift shop. I don't.
They're tired of people showing up for Blantons. I couldn't imagine.
I don't.
Happy
see
and
that.
B-Tech stuff.
Yeah, I do not see them being able to handle the riots that would happen. You know, I mean, people are passionate about this stuff.
Really.
I mean, we know we get.
Yeah, there's campers for Blantons there, for Christ's sakes. Yeah. I mean, can you imagine for B-Tech? They're like, we're gonna do 1,000 bottles at our gift shop.
Oh,
I mean,
gosh. There'd be campers out there.
There'd be 50,000
people. Like literally, like
people.
RVs. There'd be RVs of
there'd
people.
There'd be 50,000 people up and down whatever road that is, mm-hmm. just camping out, waiting to storm into the property.
You guys aren't old enough, but in the 80s, there were these Cabbage Patch, like when the Cabbage Patch dolls came out, the parents were like fighting in the aisles to get like
Beanie Babies.
It was ridiculous, and they would beat each other up with baseball bats. And it was like the first sign of like how like you could see how Americans really were. Give me mine, and like it would be like
that's
that.
That's your category of like, this is America.
Yeah. Right here. This is America. This is like how we are. We're just like,
yep,
mine, not yours. And anyway.
So to bring it back to Baker's, y'all want to do the reveal?
Yes.
Yeah.
All right, let's do it. So let's go ahead and make this happen. Also, I want to give a shout out to Beth Burrows because Beth has been a big champion of Baker's for a very long time, alumni of the show. And so always great to hear her thoughts on things. So
Blake's been on the Baker's train for a while too. He's got a ton of old Baker's bottles. He's got quite a few of them.
So gentlemen, we are correct. A was Baker's 13, not a question in doubt, right? So
very good. Very guys, good job.
So I'll let you do the next guess. B and C, what do y'all think it is?
I think
B's probably, I think C's probably whatever, the larger batch, but I could be wrong.
Okay. Fred, where are you at?
So the old wax one?
Mm-hmm. Which one do you think that is?
I think that's B.
Think that's B?
Yeah.
All right. Well, Fred, you're on point today, buddy. B is the old Baker's 7 small batch, and then C is the new Baker's single barrel. So
yeah,
there you go,
that
gentlemen.
That makes sense. Yeah.
And I think that's the weirdest thing about what we are going to be able to see with Baker's, especially with the, we called it oak water, right? I mean, but it's a single barrel. Every single one's going to be different. Yeah, and who knows what you're going to get next time. Like, I mean, like, I don't know which one we got sent. We've got another one here, which was, I mean, they literally put everything, the warehouse and the serial number and everything on here, mm-hmm. especially the age. I mean, you know, they say 7 year minimum on the label, but this one was actually 8 years and 6 months that I have in front of me. But who knows what the sample
and,
level.
And Baker's is the exact same mash bill as Knob Creek Booker's.
Yep.
That it's not on the high rye bourbon.
Yeah.
Of
old granddad
and yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Granddad and basil.
So the what's interesting about this is that I remember this. Okay, so. This is going to be going back for people if you're an old school whiskey drinker. C reminds me of what Old Taylor tasted like when Beam was putting it out. And they had a 6 year old, I think they had a 6 year old age statement. It tastes just like that from when they had it. And so, and it was oak water was kind of like a description for it. So I'm curious to find out if they're using the same barrels from that warehouse from that time. But when Beam sold Taylor to Sazerac, they just didn't give a shit about it. So it was a bottom shelf. And it's amazing to think about this, but it was a bottom shelf 6 year old. And I would buy it in like 2007, 2008, and quickly put it away because it's like, oh yeah, this is not good.
Fred, I guess one question to ask you as we kind of start wrapping this up, because you were, as you just said, buying a lot of stuff in 2007, 2008 time. Mm-hmm. Myself, I started like buying hardcore in like probably 2013. Mm-hmm. So I maybe became even before the huge influx of like 2014, 2015, but you were there 7 years before me. So kind of talk about like what you saw on the shelf back then too.
Well, the shelf was, the shelf was kind of like a little a little lazy. Like now everything is like spruced up and the retailers got the lights pointed at the ones they want you to look at. And so now there's like, it's like an experience going into a liquor store. But back then it would be like, you know, all the Heaven Hill products would be like way down here. Like only like alcoholics were buying it. You know? Yeah. And I'm like, a jug of 6 year old for fucking $7. I'm gonna grab that, you know. I mean, it's like, so like the Heaven Hill old style 6 year old green label. I've always been buying that.
Oh yeah.
But things like Old Taylor and Benchmark were there. The beautiful finds for the whiskey heads was like Weller 12 year old. I mean, there would be
go to Rite Aid and it's just
yeah. I mean, it was like Knob Creek is today. Is like Weller 12 year old was everything. I mean, that is what I bought. I bought a lot of Weller 12 year old, and I bought a lot of what else did I buy? You know, back then I bought a lot of old Overholt. I like the taste of what they used to do with that rye. I think it, you know, knowing what I know now, I mean, obviously they had older barrels going into it, but you know, that's changed quite a bit, but. The liquor store was definitely quite a bit different. The brands that, I mean, there wouldn't be, the Pappy was known at this point. So it would get pulled and put in the locked case and most of the times. But yeah,
but you, was this like for you, for me then, like I was buying, like Elijah Craig 12 was like a premium bottle to me at like $25. I was like, gosh, yeah. That's a lot of money.
For a small batch for me was.
Yeah. And then, but you'd look at like Pappy or something, you're like, gosh, $50, $60 for... I remember buying a Presidential 18 Jeffersons, and it was like
that was where I was.
It was going, like $75, or yeah. And I was like, "Oh my gosh, this is like I'm like rich right now."
I know.
You know, and I would like panic buying it. You know,
I'll never forget buying the Jefferson's Presidential 17 year old that we've been able to validate was basically Stitzelweller liquid that was. They was competing at that time. They were buying a bunch of like Stitzelweller stuff from, there were like five people trying to buy it, and they got like honey barrels. Jefferson's did. Trey was really good at getting those barrels. And I'll never forget, you know, buying that after tasting it. I think I tasted it at Corbett's. That's what I would do. I would taste stuff before I would buy it.
Oh yeah. Corbett's had a nice patio. That's right by your house.
Yeah. I missed that place.
Yeah.
And so I bought that bottle. And I'll never forget. I was like, I've tasted it. And I was like, my God, I think it was $80. And I was like, I would miss an electric bill every single day of the month to have another one of these. Because I mean, that's basically what an electric bill was at the time. It was like $80, $89. And that's how I would look at things. I would look at it in terms of like a cell phone bill or an electric bill. I'm like, is this the month that I can do without my cell phone? Yes, it is. And awesome. The thing is those bottles were on the shelf, you know, they weren't behind the case. There wasn't like all these other things and there, little things like Templeton was just starting to come out and, you know, you would see that bottle. One that caught my eye was Redemption. I became a very early fan of Redemption. And of course they would sell and all that, but they used to have these, you know, 8 and 9, 10 year old cast strength rise that to me kind of I think Redemption did more to create the connoisseurship level of rye than any other brand between like, you know, 2008 and 2012, because they were putting it out at cast strength and getting the right barrels. And so that's just the stuff that was out there. And, you know, and I was going, this is when I was writing for Tasting Panel. And so I was going and I was very much absorbing everything that I could. And there's also the fact that when you write about this stuff, and as you all know, you get samples. And this was a time where they weren't sending me little bitty bottles. They were sending me entire bottles. And like I was writing about scotch and vodka. I actually wrote about vodka at one point in my career.
We all have our downtimes.
Yeah. I had to pay the bills. And I would get sent vodka, and then I would have, wine sent. And I mean, there was a time I was getting like, you know, 200-300 packages a week. But things like the Jefferson's Reserve, or like the 18-year-old and the Pappy's and stuff, I never got samples of those things. They didn't really start sending Buffalo Trace Antique samples until like 2010. So it's I look back on that time very fondly, but most of those bottles are gone. You know, because I've always spent a lot of money on bourbon. Every year the price goes up because you meet people that have bottles and.
And there's never enough whiskey.
There's never enough.
Never enough.
It's, you're taking me back to, like, I remember when, you know, because I was Elijah Craig, Heaven Hill Homer, and I think the first brand that kind of got me to, like, stray away from that was Bullet, because it was, like, so market. It was, like, one of the first brands. Makers was always marketed heavily, but, like, Bullet and Bullet Rye was the first rye I had, and kind of sent me down liking ryes or whatever.
Down the rabbit
hole. But, like, kudos to them, because they, like, you know, were really out there, out in your face, and, you know, that kind of got me to try different things. And
I mean, it's
you're like, it's the frontier of bourbon. Like, you know, gotta try it.
and that was, so when my introduction to, you know, Bullet, you know, it came pretty quickly because, again, they were heavily marketed. And so, like, any fresh rider, you know, that's how these brands look. Ooh, a new rider in the space. Let's get him, and let's get him on our side and have him writing something positive about him. Well, you start looking into Bullet, and you've got like 15 blog posts from Chuck Cowdery from, you know, 2001 to like 2005. He's like, fraud, 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 fraud. Not true, not true, not true. I was like, oh, interesting. And so, like, you know, and that was, Bullet is one of the great stories of being introduced to, like, whiskey backstories, you know, and the fact that Augustus Bullet is arguably not, you know, wasn't a distiller. They say he was a distiller. They say there was a recipe, but they can't find it, you know, and Chuck's like, there's no, he's not on a census anywhere. It's a fascinating study of that time, and that, like, everybody felt like you had to have a backstory. So any kind of whiskey brand that was coming out, you know, kind of followed that template. And now people are like, we're barrel bourbon with two L's. You know, and so it's just, it's a very, very different time. But, you know, from a marketing perspective, you know, it was, I look back on that as, like, that was when I kind of, like, honestly, that's how I made my career, was, like, you know, calling out brands and trying to, you know, get to the bottom of things. And
well, somebody's got to come on the bullshit at once in a while, right?
Yeah. I mean, now it's like you got a legion of people, so it's not as important. But, and most people are, you know, trying to do the right thing. But, at the time, like, that's why Chuck Cowdery is, like, so important to me. And, you know, in addition to being a friend, is, like, he's the godfather of American whiskey writing. And so as I was kind of getting into the profession, you know, he's talking to me about, like, you know, the backstories, what's real, what's not, who to believe, who to trust, who not to trust. And, you know, if I look back on that time very fondly, but I will say that I do have quite a few regrets, and I would have done a lot of things differently. But I'm okay.
We'll save the regrets for another episode.
Yeah.
Part two.
Think of a good one.
Fred's regrets. Whole hour.
So let's go ahead and we'll wrap this up. So I think A was the clear winner. So Baker's 13. Yeah. Cheers to Beam. And I mean, spectacular release. I mean, it just hit all the check boxes, I think, for a lot of us here. So.
And Baker, I hope you see this. I hope you're doing well. Cheers to you, my friend.
Yeah, fantastic job.
Yep. So make sure you follow and like Bourbon Pursuit on all the social medias and support us on patreon.com/bourbonpursuit. And you can find us on every single podcast outlet channel as well. This has been a special episode. Thank you to Joel Francis, who sent us these samples. Shout out to Beth Burrows, who's always been a champion of Baker's as well. And we will see you all next week.
See ya.
Toodles.
Thank you.